You're listening to the Virginia Beef Council Hokey Pod, presented by Virginia's cattle farmers. Bring everyone back to the table and get cooking at beefitswhatsfordinner.com.
Newsom's going to try to run with it, and he's going nowhere! All the way, touchdown!
Hard, smart, tough. Is that this team or what?
Nothing but clean! Mountain air in front of him! 3-2-1, touchdown! Virginia Tech Hokies!
Now, let's get cooking for the week. With Tech Hall of Famer Mike Burnup and the voice of the Hokies, John Lazor, here's your host, Wes McElroy.
Welcome into Hokey Pod, Episode 4. For the fifth week of the college football season, we got Virginia Tech and Duke, the Friday night lights of college football, and celebrating 20 years ago in Blacksburg. I'm Wes McElroy, along with the voice of the Hokies, John Lazor, and Virginia Tech Hall of Famer, Mr. Mike Burnup. Gentlemen, how are you?
Doing great, Wes. How about you?
I'm doing good. It's kind of odd that we're here the last week of September, and it kind of feels like the first week of June.
That may be the case down in Richmond where you're at, but up here it's starting to feel a little bit like autumn. Yesterday was actually one of the most beautiful days we've had here in a long time. Little nice autumn breeze and a temperature in the mid-70s. So, yeah, we're feeling like Friday night football here for sure.
Got a little chilly at nighttime, though. It was a little nip in the air this morning.
It was 50 this morning,
40s,
yeah.
Yeah, down in the valley of the ho-ho-ho. Jolly green giant.
Well, that is the weather forecast. We're definitely going to take a climate check here on this show because, gentlemen, let's dive right into it. There's been a bye week, and we can talk about what we hope this team learned over the bye week. But this game on Friday night, I know the Hokies are only 0-1 in the ACC, and I know it's still September, but, man, does it not feel like a must win?
Yeah, you know it is. You hate to say that, but when you – put a lot into that Boston College game, and there was a lot of talk about changing the perception of the program. It was about the last thing that the Hokie Nation saw was the Hokies losing, having a losing season coming off that military bowl where they lost to Cincinnati. And so it was a chance to change the perception of the program and show what they were all about and how much better they had gotten. And, you know, you go up there and you turn it over five times and you lose the game. So, yeah, now your backs are against the wall a little bit because you can't afford to go 0-2. And you can't, you know, especially when you think about going to Miami next week. I mean, you're not going to be favored in that game. They got an open date this week, so they'll be rocking and rolling, ready to go because their season hadn't gone quite the way they wanted it either. So, yeah, I think it's a chance to maybe change the perception a little bit. I think the Hokie Nation's crying a little bit. There haven't been very many people at these home games. And then you look at the last one, they bailed out at halftime when it wasn't going very well. So, this is a big opportunity, and it's a huge game. You can't underestimate or understate that.
Yeah, without question, Wes, I completely agree with Mike. And the fact is, your margin for error that you had coming out of camp, for the most part, was gone after you lost to Boston College. But even after that happened, you could say, okay, we've got two opponents coming into our place where we can conceivably dictate the way the game is going to be played, win those games, and work on some us things in the process. The first part of that happened. You won the football game, but the second part most certainly did not happen. But all the while, you could kind of point to that. And then, okay, after that two-game stretch, we've got a bye coming up, and then things set up favorably, including this Friday night game. Well, that's where you are now. So all that stuff's in the rearview mirror, and it's not that you're going to be a finished product when you take the field on Friday night, but you've got to be drastically improved in terms of your execution level. And one of the snippets that I picked out, and if people want to go back and listen to Tech Talk Live from Monday night, I thought what Justin Fuentes said to Mike and I was very interesting. He said, we have to take the field without a level of timidity. We cannot be timid, particularly in our home environment. And I thought that was telling about maybe the way the Hokies have approached some of these games thus far this season. So absolutely, without question, they need to come out. They need to play much better than they have in the first three games, save for a drive here or a quarter there. And that's absolutely what this fan base needs, of course. But more importantly, it's what this team needs.
And Mike, you said the P word there, perception. And I talk about this a lot on my show in Richmond, that there's the difference between perception and reality. And sometimes they're the same and sometimes they're not. And this feels like a game to state the reality because the perception has not been good. I'm sure you guys saw it. ESPN had the Hokies as their 13th ACC team in 14 teams. And whether that be true or not, it's still the perception that's growing. And Mike, you talked about the fan base and people leaving. These next 2 weeks feel like the R games, the reality games of what this team really is and where this season really is going.
It's not a great time, obviously, and I think it needs to change fast or, you know, you're going to lose the fan base and, You know, you're not going to get a big crowd for Rhode Island no matter what happens, right? And so the rest of those are going to be ACC games. But I'm telling you, the bulk of the schedule, the worst part of the schedule is going to be at the end of it when you got five games against teams that are big and physical and three of them are on the road. And you know, the other part of this equation that makes things a little bit tougher is the fact that UVA is doing so well. You know, they're 4-0, got the big win over Pitt. You know, they're coming off the Florida State game. You know, they beat Old Dominion when they came from behind, and now they got to go to Notre Dame. That's going to be interesting to see how that game goes. If they can pull off the win there on the road, upset Notre Dame, the Irish, man, you just got to be thinking down the road that that's going to be a handful without a doubt. So, yeah, you got to get it going. And you can't talk about it much more. You've had an open date. You've had time to get a few things corrected, and you better show up and play and get it going.
Yeah, well, sure. That's it, Wes. Sorry to cut you off. I mean, that's what it is. That's going back to what I was saying. Like, your margin for error, your sense of, okay, we'll get it done in the days to come, in the weeks to come, that's gone. I mean, it's here on Friday night. You have to make that statement. It doesn't need to be domination of Duke, but certainly you have to showcase that you're a better football team than they are at the moment, and that's a question mark going in, and it leads back to all the things that Mike was just talking about. By the way, I don't see UVA winning at Notre Dame.
Let's shuffle. We're going to get to the Coastal here because this thing is an enigma, and we'll get to the Hokie schedule, and we also want to get to the events around Friday night. But let's transition the conversation to on the field and what we hope this team accomplished or worked on or figured out in the bye week. And let's talk a little positive here. Let's talk about the thing that we saw was a spark the last time out, and that was Keyshawn King in the run game. And obviously Duke's defense looks like it's stout up front, but what did you guys see differently as Keyshawn started getting things going? What did you see from the run game last time out?
You know, he got his lather worked up a little bit. A lot of those running backs will tell you, man, give me more carries. I need to get warmed up and get into the flow of the game, see how it goes. And, you know, he talked about in the post game when we interviewed him that he showed more patience. You know, he let his line kind of open the holes, and then he had that burst about him. Well, he's got a burst like nobody else on this team does. You know, I think you know, I sit on the air. He reminds you a little bit of Ryan Williams because he had that burst about him, and he could really get up in the hole and change directions quickly. So I think he was certainly a bright spot, and the fact that he showed some great patience and let the game come to him a little bit and ended up having a great game. So, you know, there's a lot of things to talk about during the off week, you know, the offensive line and getting those guys more work and try to find some continuity and, you know, what was Jerry Kill going to do about it, and who maybe stood up and made some strides. But the running game has got to get going. I mean, Duke's defense is really good. Those defensive end, both of them have over, what, 17 tackles for loss in their careers. I mean, they're really, really good. Linebackers run well. So, you know, Coach Fu mentioned Monday night, Alabama didn't run the ball against them very well. I think they had, what, 145 yards or something, less than 3.5 yards a carry. So their defense is pretty good against the run. So Hokies got to find a way to run the football somehow. You know, Ryan had a great game passing against them a year ago. It's a different team. But I think it's going to be really, really important to kind of establish a run and try to get some continuity in an offensive line. And hopefully some of the guys that were hurt will be able to come back and play.
Yeah, and I think to Mike's point, well, a number of Mike's points there, Keyshawn King, of course, had that explosive second half, and he was able to eclipse 100 yards, and he had the big 54-yard run as a part of it, and you saw some holes getting opened up against that Furman front, which is something that you expected to be able to do going into the game, and for whatever reason you weren't able to do until the second half. And that's a positive. You see what Keyshawn King can do and what he can provide when he's in space. Now the key is getting him into space against better defensive fronts, to better defensive teams in the first two levels, and that's Duke, because I don't think there's any question about the fact that this will be the most stout defensive front that Virginia Tech has seen this year. Boston College limited the Hokies in many ways running the football, but that was a patched together Boston College front that essentially had lost everything from a year ago and were playing together for the first time. That's not the case with this Duke front, and I don't mean to frighten people, but Mike mentioned the ends all go inside. You get Edgar Serenoid back. He's a sixth year senior. You saw a couple of the highlights and what he was able to do against that Alabama offensive front. So that's a big part of the challenge and a big part of the question to me, Wes, is how stubborn can you be in trying to run the football through the tackles when that might not be the case? Do you have to quickly adapt and use the screen game? Do you have to try to get the ball to the edge off the sweep game that we saw them do in the second half against Furman too? And that's a question, of course, for Brad Cornelson and also for Justin Fuente. I thought another thing that was said this week from Jerry Kill was interesting, and it's something that mimics what we have been saying, in that, yes, it's great to have versatility and athleticism and depth on the offensive line, but they've got to get in there and identify who these five guys are. Is it going to be those older guys coming back and you hope they're able to play this week in terms of Hoyt and Jackson, or is it going to be the younger guys? Is it going to be Nestor and Hudson? Regardless, Mikey, of who that five is, you've got to identify that for better or for worse and take what you get going forward with some continuity.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have a little continuity, and you got to get those guys all playing on the same level and get them used to playing against each other. I mean, I don't know that Jerry Kill's going to come in and say, hey, we need a zone block or man block or whatever. You know, he may change the scheme a little bit, but I think if you can identify those five and kind of get most of the reps with those, it'll probably help things. I mean, the numbers offensively are just not very good. You look, they're around 100th in yards per carry, you know, less than 4 yards, and they don't have a lot of runs over 10 yards or more. I think they were like 105th in the country or something like for that too. So they need to get some stuff going in the run game. And unfortunately, you know, you've played two of the easier teams on the schedule and you weren't able to build it up. That's concerning when you should have been able to make big strides in that department against those two teams that you played that weren't as good as some of these ACC teams.
Guys, I know you talked about it last week, but since we have the opportunity and since we have the luxury of time, this being a podcast, you keep bringing up Jerry Kill. I'm interested from both of you. What do you think Jerry can bring not only to this staff but to this program?
Well, Wes, many people in our lives are there to provide a calming influence. That's why you and I are friends, of course. Mike and I are constant travel companions and do that for each other often.
By the way, folks, he's referencing himself. That's what he does for Burnup and I's life.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Absolutely right. No, to Mike's point, I don't think on Friday night you're going to see this dramatically new run scheme, or you're going to see the game called a whole lot differently or differently at all than the way that you have in terms of how Brad Cornelison has called it, how Justin Fuente has impacted that. But as Jerry Kill responded to that similar question earlier this week, he said, I bring my 36 years or 37 years of coaching experience, whether that be in a head coaching role or an assistant or various stops or various schemes or various situations. And it's just another voice in the room. But I think most importantly, it's just a guy that can be a sounding board, particularly for Justin Fuente. Coach Kill was quick to point out, you know, when I was at Minnesota, I had that guy. And I think most coaches across the country have that guy. And that's essentially what it is. It's somebody to validate some of the things that you're already doing and looking at it from an outside perspective at first and then making that an inside perspective that you're somewhat forced to listen to in terms of cleaning some of the more obvious things, I think, up in the room.
You know, Jerry Kill's a guy that's been around us so long, and he's won everywhere he was. He's in Hall of Fames. He's been Coach of the Year in this league, that league. He's just improved everywhere he's gone. He's left it in much better shape. And so I think a fresh set of eyes certainly helped matters. You know, Coach Beamer, he did that a lot. Obviously, he'd bring guys in and let them watch practice and see. Some guys were NFL guys, and he helped guys along the way as well, let them come in and sit and scheme up. But it was kind of funny and interesting that Jerry Kill, when he was in that press conference Monday, he was talking about all the guys that he had come cross paths with, you know, with Jafar Williams and Bud Foster and some of the other guys on the staff. He'd known from this stop or that stop. It's like a big fraternity those guys have, and it's like they resurface somewhere. But all along the trail, they run into these guys, and they have their kind of lifelong friends. But he has the utmost respect for Coach Fu and what he's about and what his staff is all about. So I think it's a win-win for him, and I think he'll certainly help add something to the plate.
No, it's a good time to talk about another coach we all have great respect for. This is Hokie Pod, Wes McElroy, John Lazor, Mike Burnup. That would be David Cutcliffe, and he's got another quarterback at Duke. Quentin Harris is the quarterback. Lays, let me start with you. How does this change the Duke offense from a season ago?
Well, I think it changes it dramatically, and I think you have the film to watch because, of course, Daniel Jones suffered that broken collarbone last year, and you saw what Harris was going to do with this offense. It's a more mobile offense. You're going to move the pocket more. They have mixed in some triple option. I don't honestly anticipate, and I'll be interested to hear what Mike has to say about it too, anticipate seeing a ton of that. I think they did that to kind of eat the clock a bit in the second half in a game that they were controlling. But what people need to understand is Harris is certainly mobile, and he can run the football, and he is your leading rusher right now for Duke, but he can also throw the football. And I think to our point against the opponents that Virginia Tech has played the last couple of weeks, that's essentially been what Duke has done too. And you've seen clean pockets and a lot of time for Quentin Harris to throw the football in those last two games, and he is certainly capable of distributing the football around. So it just adds another element to it. I think oftentimes in Bud Foster's tenure, which stretches more than three decades, when you have a quarterback like a Daniel Jones who can run, and you saw that in his NFL debut last weekend, but is primarily a pocket guy that wants to stay there and wants to throw the football, you can get after him. And Bud and the LPD has had a lot of success over the last few years, whether that's Jones or Cirk. So I think this presents a different challenge in terms of some of the areas where the Hokies have struggled. And it will be interesting to see how Duke wants to approach this game in terms of what they're going to attempt to throw at this Virginia Tech defense, because it is a bit more diverse than it has been the last few years.
I like Quentin Harris. I think when we were at the ACC Media Day down in Charlotte, man, you couldn't help but be impressed with how sharp that kid was. Been yeah. around the program forever and ever, just talks eloquently. He is the real deal. And he's waited and been patient, and finally he's got his chance to play, and he's made the most of it. And you look at his numbers, I mean, he's pretty impressive. He started out the other day, he made 12 for 12 his first passes. He was, what, 24 of 27 or something. And, you know, he's only got those two interceptions, and that was in the first start against Alabama, the opening game. But the guy's almost got 1,000 yards of total offense. I mean, he's the leading rusher on the team as well. And so he is a true dual-threat quarterback, and very mobile, very agile, and he's got speed, got a good arm. So, yeah, Bud Foster is going to have his hands full with Quentin Harris without a doubt. And I think that, again, they are a lot different with Daniel Jones with Quentin Harris as opposed to Daniel last year. So it's going to be fun to see. And they've had both had a week to scheme, an extra week. So Coach Cutt will come up with some different things. And I think that's one thing that's been pretty evident to me in this year as opposed to last year is Bud Foster. You know, last year the defense seemed to just really falter in the second half. I mean, they just got worn down, and just some of those games got abused with the running game and whatnot. And this year it seems like the guys are a little bit smarter. They've seen a little bit more, and I think Bud Foster's been able to make some better adjustments that the guys can understand and play better in the second half. And so we saw that certainly at Boston College, and, you know, we've seen it in a couple of the other games as well. So I think that's certainly encouraging, and it'll be a nice chess match between Coach Cutt and Bud Foster.
I think one way to point out what might be different this year, Wes, is something that we saw in the game last year. And again, Daniel Jones was coming off very quickly from that collarbone, much more quickly than anyone expected. I remember waking up in the hotel and getting the alert that he was going to play and actually telling Coach Fuente that he was in the weight room at the time. And he said, okay, text Bud. But I think that going into that game, you weren't as concerned because clearly Duke didn't want to have a lot of contact on Daniel Jones with that repaired collarbone in that game. And you saw House Gaines stand up off his defensive end spot quite a bit and then drop into coverage, and you didn't have to necessarily worry about that threat so much of Daniel Jones leaving the pocket on his feet. Well, that's not going to be the case, obviously, with Quentin Harris. So it'll be interesting to see how the Hokies counter, particularly with which defensive ends they have available.
And I think you've seen, too, with most games this year, that quarterbacks at nowadays, I mean, they're good enough. If they have time to throw, they can be deadly. And we've seen that in our games. Obviously, look at what Brown was able to do in the Boston College game in the first half. I think Bud's got to get real creative. And, you know, you got to be under – control, obviously, rushing Quentin Harris. You can't let him get out of the pocket, but you can't let him sit back there and be comfortable either. You know, they got to bring the pressure, and we've seen that in a lot of these big games that we've seen on Saturday nights the last few weeks. Man, those guys are bringing the heat. And you challenge that quarterback to see if he can make the play, and I think Bud's going to have to do that.
Well, one guy we have to wait to see if he can bring the heat with is Tywan Garbutt, who we listened to Coach Fuente the other day. He's day-to-day. If he's back, you have to wonder how much he does play. And then I'm curious of what you guys have thought about the others that have progressed in his absence.
Well, it was easily the best game that Emmanuel Belmar has played since he converted to defensive end. against Furman. He was very active. He was in the backfield. And, yes, some of that you have to take with a grain of salt because of the offensive line that he was facing. But he was violent at the point of attack. His sack that he had in that game was really one of those where he threw the quarterback backwards and was really getting there with some speed. So I like the progression that Emmanuel Belmar has taken on the one side. But with that said, Tywan Garbutt is without question your best and most true edge pass rusher. So clearly he's a guy that this team is identifying as someone that they need to get back. And whether he is there or not for Duke, and if he is, how many snaps can he play and all of those things against a very big and formidable Duke offensive front, I think Mike goes into what Bud will be able to do in terms of what his game plan is. Do you have to bring as much help if you have Garbutt than you've had to without him? Chamari Connor has been a constant presence on some of those safety blitzes and things like that. And those are all of the things that they know over at the Merriman Center, the practice facility for the Hokies, in terms of what they're going to be able to do and what they're not going to be able to do, whether or not he's there. But Garbutt's presence or lack thereof, like we talk about with Damon Hazleton on the other side of the ball, changes a lot of things.
Yeah, he had such a great year last year when he came on so strongly the second part of the year. And just to have him get knocked out in the first quarter of the first game just is really sad for him, because you know he wanted to have a great year. So he is a difference maker. I don't know what his stamina will be like, how many plays he can play. Obviously, being a night game, that will probably help matters. Plus, the crowd will be electric, and that should help him get jacked up and be able to play longer. I just hope he's able to play and suit up and be able to make an impact. You know, Eli Adams has been – you know, playing really, really well. And I think Jalen Griffin has played well too. But you mentioned Belmar, man, seven tackles and tackle and a half for loss. He really did play well. But, you know, Garbutt's a different animal. And he can certainly be a difference maker and frees up Bud to do some different things, especially when you got a mobile quarterback.
It is Mike Burnup. It is John Lazor. Wes McElroy. It is the Hokie Pod Episode 4 as we look ahead to Friday night, Virginia Tech and Duke. And real quick, I'm curious of your thoughts, guys. We all kind of grew up where college football was Saturday afternoon, Saturday night. What do you think about playing college football on a Friday night?
Well, I love playing football at night. Obviously, in Blacksburg and inside Lane Stadium, it's one of the truly phenomenal environments in college football. As someone who came up calling high school football and seeing how much that can mean to communities, I don't exactly love having to steal that thunder a little bit on a Friday night here in the area. And if truth be told, the athletics department here probably doesn't love that either. They'd rather play on a Thursday night. But the coaching staff will take that extra day of preparation. But it'll all dissipate once we get inside Lane Stadium on Friday night, and it will be absolutely electric. So, yeah, absolutely you understand how that makes things a little bit difficult logistically around the state, but ultimately I think that's a sacrifice the area is willing to make.
Yeah, not a huge fan of Friday night games, at least at this point in the year. You know, you can kind of understand a little bit after Thanksgiving, because it's kind of been the sequence to play UVA, and most of the high school football is done then anyway, but it really kind of interferes with high school football, and they're having to change games to Thursday night or Saturday or Saturday afternoon. And you know, you can't have recruits here except for a couple, I think Fu said he was going to have, and it just makes it more difficult with getting the parking lots cleared and all those sorts of things. But you know, that's part of it. The ACC's got that slot on Friday night, and they're going to play football. And you know, if you're better, you play Thursday nights. The Hokies hadn't been good enough to play on Thursday night, and that's part of that issue and perception and all those sorts of things. And you know, it just that's just the way it is.
Well, Virginia Tech they are taking the lemons, I guess, of this situation. They're making lemonade out of it, because there's a lot of festivities. The marketing department's going big on this one. And, Mike, we're going to talk to you in a little bit about the celebration of the 99 team. But fireworks, I think there's a whiteout. They're going to be doing stuff all through the course of the game. So they're really blowing it out based off what this home schedule isn't this year. And from a pageantry standpoint, this just kind of amps things up of what a big night and a big game this really is.
Well, you look at it, Wes, and I like to say this because the marketing department a lot of times is the unsung heroes that doesn't get to come out and take a bow, and they have an internal saying that winning isn't a strategy, and that by no means means that they don't want to win or that makes their lives easier, because it absolutely does. And when you're winning, things are easier to obtain. So when you're not, and you don't have some of those marquee games, they're going to get theirs, if that makes sense, as a marketing department. The last couple of years, it's been obvious what your big build-up game was going to be. Clemson on the schedule and coming in the regular season here a couple of years ago. Notre Dame making their first ever appearance in Blacksburg last year was going to be it. Back in 2015, of course, you did it right out of the box with Ohio State, and you had Brad Paisley playing the night before, and you really went after it. Well, this is that game, and it's not to say that there won't be games of bigger significance down the road in terms of how it may impact the coastal race or any of those other things, and you may even get another night game depending on your TV slots the rest of the way. But without knowing that, and knowing that this one is going to be at night, this is the big build-up game. There's a concert in Hokie Village. Mike and Luther and you are going to be displaced up on Washington outside of Castle Coliseum because of it. They're going to have the skydiving team at halftime. They're going to have the cell phone flashing light show after the third quarter, and on and on and on it goes. So absolutely, the environment's going to be at the full level that you would expect, and that's, again, a testament to the marketing effort here at Virginia Tech.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty cool. You know, that the live concert in the Hokie Village with the Works, who's a really good band out of Roanoke that I've heard a few times, and got a Nashville guy named Jay Allen I don't know much about, also coming in at, 5 o'clock, I guess.
Up and comer,
yeah. So that'll be kind of cool. So the Hokie Village will be rocking and rolling. That'll be fun. And, you know, it's the first ever night white effect game, so that's pretty cool. Not that a lot of people have white coats, but they got to get a little creative in that regard. But, yeah, the fireworks are going to be fun, you know, all during the game. Hopefully there'll be some fireworks to be able to shoot off when you score. That means you got to be playing well. You don't want to have leftovers. That's certainly not a good thing. So, yeah, it's going to be fun. And skydivers wait until halftime, probably, because when it's dark, that'd be much, much better than seeing them come down there when it's still a little bit light out. So a lot of stuff going around this game, and you had to kind of blow it out because, yeah, there's no guarantee you'll get another night game.
Yeah, and I think, Wes, too, it only magnifies why this program needs to make the showing that we said at the top of this podcast that they need to make, because when you look at it, it's going to have all of that, including the celebration of the 1999 team on the 20th anniversary of that team and what they were able to accomplish, what they represented then and what they continue to represent now for Virginia Tech. And I know we're going to discuss their importance in a little bit here on Hokie Pod, but again, to do all of that and to have all of that build up and environment and all those things, I think, again, it just magnifies the onus on this team to come out and put forth an effort that would be indicative of that environment.
And it's been an interesting thing this week where there's this selling, this urgency of this is a big game and this is a must win. And the coaches are selling that they've got to play a full 60 minutes. That's been, Bud was talking about that on Monday or Tuesday. That's been the message from the coaching staff. I'm interested to see how the young guys are going to react to the environment. And also that fine line, as I just spoke about, where you're selling the urgency where it, and I know coaches hesitate to say it's a must-win game because what do you do about all the games after that? But I'm very curious to see how the team reacts to the pageantry and to how big everybody's making this game.
Well, I think when we were out there Monday at practice, Coach Fu kind of told them after the practice was over that, guys, you better come in here with a sense of urgency, because he talked about last year how the Hokies had come off that loss to Old Dominion, and they were ready to play and took it to the Duke Blue Devils down there in Durham when half the place was Hokie fans across the way, and beat them pretty soundly, 31-14, I think it was. And Ryan Willis's first start, man, you didn't know what you were going to get from this team that had all that dysfunction happening at Old Dominion, and they were a highly ranked team. They get beat down there and you're getting embarrassed and all those sorts of things. You didn't really know what was going to happen. But they bought the energy and they took the fight to Duke. And Coach Fu just talked about that. He says, you know, that's what's going to happen this time. Duke's going to come up here. They're going to bring the fight to you. You better be ready to match their intensity and get after it. I mean, we only have 12 opportunities to play games. And, you know, there's going to be 7 at Lane Stadium. We already got a couple down. You got to take advantage of those opportunities. It's a privilege to do that. And they better be ready to go and match the intensity and bring it, because if they don't, Duke's certainly good enough to take care of you and whoop you.
Yeah, and I think, Wes, I was out of town for a few days and came back, and I think what a lot of the feeling is you're not in that urgent spot like you were after Old Dominion last year, because you had the immediacy of the shock and the hurt and all the emotion that came with it. And to Coach Fuente's message earlier this week, the team was able to channel that in a positive way and go down and kind of manhandle Duke in that game in a variety of ways and have success behind your backup quarterback turned starter. And my point is, that's essentially the same spot this team is in right now, despite the fact that technically they're coming off back-to-back wins over Old Dominion and Furman. That was the feeling, again, walking out of Lane Stadium, was that's not what it's supposed to look like. That's not the level at which you need to execute. And again, I think the time away, if you can have used it positively, will be good. But in order for that to have a positive effect on Friday night, you have to somehow ramp back up to that level of urgency that you had 10 days ago, even though you've had that buffer in between. So that's a challenge for Coach Fuente, and he acknowledged that on Monday night in terms of recognizing the fact that, yes, the air does go out of the balloon a little bit because of the time away, and this is a team that doesn't have time to enter the game this way. They've got to come in. They can't be timid. They can't be flat as they have been at times in the first halves of games thus far this year. They need to come in, take it to Duke like they did last year in Durham.
Well, I think these coaches, they understand the big picture, too, about what's coming up. I mean, if you lay an egg out here Friday night, then you talk about having a difficult task to get this team ready to go play at Miami when the last time they went down there got pretty ugly, you know. So that's certainly looming, that you got to have some momentum going into that game, and you better take care of business and make hay when the sun shines, when you got a chance at home with a great electric cloud and crowd and some good atmosphere. You better take advantage of that and get this place, get the perception right.
Still to come, John's going to sit down with Keyshawn King. We're also going to take a look around the Coastal. But since we're on the topic of Friday night and some of the things that are going on, part of the festivities, there will be a celebration of the 20th anniversary of the 1999 team that went on to play in the BCS National Championship game. And Mike, you were along for that ride. You saw that every week. Take us down memory lane of what it was like to be around Blacksburg as that season went on.
You know, that's back in the day when it was just pretty incredible when you think about how this team just dominated teams offensively, both sides of the ball, offensively and defensively. I mean, that team there was incredibly special. Obviously, Michael Vick was a huge part of that. But not only were they good on offense with the Andre Davises and the big offensive line that they had and, you know, solid fullbacks like Cullen Hawkins and Jared Ferguson, you know, Michael was incredible. Good kickers, you know. I mean, they just they had it on both sides of the ball, offense, defense, and special teams. And the Corey Moores just were incredible on defense. And the way he took over that game against Brandon Streeter from Clemson on Thursday night and just dominated the game. And, you know, he won all the awards that year. And just the lead up to the game, and then obviously beating Boston College the final game of the year and realizing that the other team, I forget who it was, got beat and the Hokies got into the national championship picture. That was pretty incredible. And then all the week, 10 days we were in New Orleans leading up to the national championship game was something you just can't duplicate. It was incredible, the great time that we had down there and that build up. And then having the lead going into the fourth quarter was pretty amazing. And special teams, of all the things Coach Beamer built his resume on, Beamer ball and all that, special teams kind of haunted him in that game. And so, yeah, it was a special team, special run. I'm not sure how many of those guys. I did see part of the list. Some of them are coming back. You know, Michael Vick's got that deal with Fox, and I'm sure Saturdays he's obviously tied up, but I don't know if he can sneak him in here Friday or not. But some of the linemen and some of the other people will be here. So that'll be kind of a cool thing to have those guys back and recognized, because what they did was pretty incredible.
Well, first of all, Wes, what I would say is I can't imagine 10 consecutive days with Mikey at the Atlanta airport with the food and drink options that they have there, let alone 10 consecutive days in New Orleans.
New Orleans? Holy
back
cow.
20 years ago, too. I mean, it's not that you've lost a half a step at all,
man.
But, man. Well, I shudder at that, but I think
we were doing some damage there at that Riverside Hilton.
I have no doubt. It's probably not called the Riverside Hilton anymore.
How about that place in New Orleans where that lady swings out and her legs are swinging out of in and out of the saloon? I killed about four pair of jeans just because you had to just throw them away after you'd been on Bourbon Street.
Oh, jeez.
Nighttime.
That's a separate podcast. Thankfully, they didn't have podcasting back then because you probably would have had to do a few. But Wes,
or social media.
Yeah, without question. Woo. But, Wes, obviously, I was nowhere close to even being in consideration as part of that run back in 99. But I think, you know, I can offer what it looked like from the outside in terms of – I remember in 99 going, you know, who is this Virginia Tech team? Where did they come from? You'd heard of Virginia Tech, obviously. And if you're a sports fan of any level, you knew of them, but not in that way. And I just remember them popping on TV and watching Michael Vick, and it's like, what is he going to do next? What's this team going to do next? And that was really, and this, I am certainly nowhere close to being alone in this, really the place where a lot of people discovered Virginia Tech football, myself included. So for me, these are all guys that Mike knows and have worked with, and it'll be a reunion of sorts for him on Friday night. For me, it's still that awe factor of, wow, you know, if Michael Vick's here, there is Michael Vick. If Corey Moore, you know, you're walking up and remembering what they did. So I think everybody will have something to take out of it on Friday.
If I could share this story with you guys, I was on a cruise ship. I turned 21 on December 29th, 1999. So we did a Millennium Cruise, and that game was right after New Year's, and I remember it. And somehow, some way, we were out in the middle of the ocean, and somehow, some way, the cruise ship hooked up an illegal feed from ABC Sports. There was no commercials. You could hear the announcers during the breaks. I don't know how, but what I remember about that game, and people, and it wasn't a bunch of Hokies and Seminoles. It was just casual football fans. But the people who were there in tuxedos, evening gowns, in the lobby, in this cruise ship, and they stood in silence because people were so amazed by the athleticism of Virginia Tech and Michael Vick and Florida State and Peter Warwick. And, I mean, you're just sitting on there on this billion-dollar cruise ship, and people paid thousands of dollars to go on, and everyone's sitting around huddled to watch this fascinating football game between two incredibly athletic teams.
Well, that could be another podcast. Wes at 21 on a cruise ship out there for his
21st. It was a good time.
That might be its own little special podcast one day. We'll see what kind of trouble you got into. But yeah, it was amazing. And I'll never forget old Bobby Bowden after the game. He was talking about, dadgummit, we just couldn't tackle that Michael Vick boy. He was something else. He was so fast and so quick. He was the best player on the field. And it was unbelievable, man. You just thought that had Michael not got hurt the next year, they could have been right back in that game. But he only lost one game as a starter, and that was it, the national championship. They lost to Miami the next year, but he was hurt and didn't start and didn't play. And Andre Davis kind of got banged up in that game too. But, boy, you just wonder what if, because he was an incredible athlete and a generational kid. You might never, ever, ever see another one like him.
So that'll be coming up Friday night, a celebration of the 20th anniversary of the 1999 team throughout the game on Friday night. Let's jump back into our DeLorean, our flux capacitor, bring it back here to 2019. And let's take a look at this Coastal, which is still – I don't want to go as far to say Coastal chaos, but do you guys still – North Carolina up and down, Virginia less than impressive last week. Pitt, they come back and beat UCF. Do you guys still look at this entire Coastal as a mystery?
Yeah, and it's not because of where it sits right now, because it's what people have put on film, what they've put out there. I don't think there's any team that's going to run the table in the Coastal. Maybe people thought that Virginia was going to do that until you saw them play Old Dominion, and less than impressive would be one way to put it. They received a gift from Bobby Wilder in the second half of that game. I think they were going to win anyway, despite going for it on fourth and one from his own 29-yard line out of the shotgun with my favorite play, the shotgun quarterback draw. But I digress. Even if they won that game, that I think Old Dominion, and to Coach Wilder's credit, they exposed some things in Virginia. I was stunned that Pittsburgh beat Central Florida. And it's not because I was so high on UCF, but I was pretty low on Pitt, honestly. North Carolina, I don't know what to feel right now, because they looked great in Mac's debut and the next week, and then they've come back to earth a little bit, more than a little bit, with what happened to them last weekend, and on it goes. Where's this Miami team under Manny Diaz? Again, the cupboard is full of talent, particularly on the defensive side, and they're having trouble getting rid of opponents that normally wouldn't even gain entrance into Hard Rock Stadium. And where are the Hokies? You know, are they going to show up and live up to their talent on the offensive side of the football and start putting some points on the board? So, yeah, I guess to answer your question, Wes, we really have no idea, and the very few things that we thought going into the season that we knew have not lived up to be the case.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch the last part of this season, where all these ACC games are going to come stacked up, because obviously UVA is in the driver's seat. They're really good. You know, they probably paid Old Dominion kind of like the attitude that Virginia Tech had last year down there in Norfolk, right? This team can't beat us. You know, we're coming off a big win at Florida State. We got Notre Dame next week. We're going to, you know, we're good enough to beat them, maybe not playing it totally at 100%. But they got their eyes opened at halftime when they were getting beat and got the job done. The pick six was certainly huge in the third quarter. And then, obviously, like Lay said, going for it on fourth and one at the 29 was just insane. But anyway, yeah, you just wonder the rest. I mean, obviously Carolina got the great start beating Miami and South Carolina, and then, you know, sitting there losing to App State, you never know. And but UVA beating Pitt, and then Pitt's playing Penn State really, really well, and then they get the win over UCF. Obviously, they're going to be a big physical team that'll be their handful going down the road. And just think about on the other side with Wake being 4-0, Hokies, you got to play them, man. They're good too. So Georgia Tech's kind of a little bit of a mystery. They're at Temple this week. That's going to be interesting at 1-2. So you just never know. There's a lot of football left to be played, and you better take advantage. But I think clearly UVA has shown, at least to this point, that they're the best team in the division. And that's part of the reason why so many people, including myself, picked them to win the division. So we'll see. It's going to be fun to watch, though.
Well, the one leading off the Coastal weekend is going to be Virginia Tech and Duke on Friday night. When we come back, we're going to preview the entire setup of our broadcast, what's going on, where you can find us. But next, after these messages, John Lazor sits down with Hokies running back Keyshawn King. It's after this.
So I bet you've had the same conversation I've had. You've been talking to people and they say, I need to eat better. I just think I'd feel better if I ate better. And it's right about here where someone lays on the excuses. I'm too busy. I'm not a very good cook. Well, I'm here to tell you that there's actually somebody out there who wants to help you eat good and not spend a lot of time in the kitchen, no matter how well you know your way around. It's HelloFresh. They're going to give you delicious meals right on your doorstep, and they're going to tell you how to cook them. It's super easy. It's super delicious, and it's very nutritious. I have a job that's not 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. I work late a couple of nights a week, and I work Saturdays. This has been a huge help for us. We're eating good. We're getting out of our dinner rut with chef-curated recipes, and we're foodies. We like to eat, and we like to cook. And for this to hit our standards, that's saying something. HelloFresh made me a believer, and they want to make you a believer. And right now, for your first month, you can get $80 off by logging on to HelloFresh.com/college80 and entering the code college80. That's HelloFresh.com/college80 and enter the code college80. It's like getting 8 meals for free. You can also get yummy add-ons like garlic bread or cookie dough. No more excuses. Start eating right, and it's all coming to your front door. HelloFresh.com.
Hokie Pod for Duke Week continues, and we have a very special guest as we're joined by freshman running back Keyshawn King. And Keyshawn, we have to start right here. I know everybody wants to talk about your big coming out party against Furman and how you got to Blacksburg and all that. We're going to do that. But first, newly 19 years old, your birthday yesterday, happy belated birthday, comes on a bye week, or the back end of a bye week. Did you get to spend any time enjoying it?
Yes, sir, I did. I got to go out to eat with my family, have food and stuff like that. We had a great time. We had some family time and just enjoyed our day.
Let's go back to Oak Leaf High School, Orange Park, Florida. You have a ton of interest coming out of high school in the recruiting process. What was that process like for you? And ultimately, what eventually drew you to Blacksburg to make this program home?
That process was pretty fun. It showed that my talent was paying off. It showed that my hard work was paying off. And coming to Blacksburg, it was a dream come true. Like everything that they showed me and things like that, it met the criteria that I was looking for. First of all, they all treat me like family members. Like, you know, they all loving and caring and things like that. I love the way that they show love. And all the opportunities was there. All the opportunities that they said that I have, they owned up to it, and they showed me that if I come in and I play and I do show my talent and things like that, that I'll be able to, you know, compete with the rest.
What was the messaging to you about becoming the feature back? This program hadn't really had one over the last few years. What was their messaging to you about coming in and becoming that guy?
Hard work. I had to work hard. I had to come in and work hard, and nothing was going to be handed to me. I had to come in and show that that I could do what I say I want to do, and I could do what they obviously want me to do. So when I went in there, I just knew that I just had to stay focused and, you know, work, and everything would fall in place.
You were not an early enrollee. You come in the summer. Of course, that puts you a little bit behind some of even the other freshmen. What was your mindset coming in out of a prolific career at Oak Leaf? Make no mistake about that. You had a lot of success there. What were you thinking walking out of the practice field day one?
I knew that none of that mattered. none of that high school stuff mattered. When it came down to coming to college, you know, you had to prove your point. You're at the bottom again. You got to work and come to man and be the man in college again. You got to work your way up the ladder. Nothing's going to be handed to you. I knew that when I came in, I wasn't just going to be the top dog off top. I had to work for it.
What was working with some of the more veteran guys like Deshaun McLeese, whom you do now even in practice and games, but also Jalen Holston? How helpful were they in terms of coming in and getting you straight right off the bat?
Oh, man, they were very helpful. There's no such thing as too much knowledge. You always got to learn new things, you know, and learning from them guys made me better in many ways, mentally and physically. I love them boys. They treat me like their little brother, and they took me in under their wing and showed me what to do and how to do it.
Keyshawn King is with us. We're going to get back to his breakout game. He's like, when are we going to talk about the Furman game? We're going to do that in just a second. But as you go through camp, at what point when you're in camp do you realize, you know what, I might be able to contribute right away to this team? I think I'm opening some eyes, and I think I might have a role.
I just seen the rotation. I seen the rotation that they had me in, you know, competing with the guys, and I knew that they wanted me to be in early, so I just went out there and I had to, you know, bounce up, you know, man up, become a man and do the things that they asked. And if I execute those right, I knew that I have a chance to come out there and play. But I didn't have the mentality to come in here and just take over. So, you know, I had to remain humble at all times.
We talked to you a little bit after that outstanding performance against Furman, and you were quick, like good running backs will be, giving credit to the offensive line. But it also came out later that you guys had a conversation at halftime, and what I took away from that was being impressed that as a freshman and as a guy that's just gotten to this program, you were willing to tell those guys, we need to do this, and they said in response to you, they obviously responded with their performance. What in your personality allows you to come in and say, guys, we need to do it this way, even though you're a relative newcomer?
I just feel like if nobody's going to say nothing, somebody got to say something, you know. So I went in there just knowing that, you know, if you speak up, they'll respect you more than just being quiet. And when they're doing something wrong, let them just go down the wrong path. I'd rather say something than let them go down the wrong way. Like, come on, let's make a change. And at that moment, we really needed somebody to speak up, you know. So I just took that as the opportunity to just say, hey, O-line, let's go, you know. Just get to the backers, let's get to the second level, let's move these boys out the way, and let's get it rolling.
And you did. You got it rolling very quickly in the second half. What did you notice that was different in terms of the push that they were getting and what you were seeing in terms of having lanes to run?
Oh, the effort, man. Obviously, the effort. I knew that, boy, once they heard that from me and things like that, that they was going to get the job done. Those boys went out, they executed, and they showed that they was willing and hungry and ready to do whatever it took to get that dub. So once they started opening them holes and things like that, and I seen that, it was like, okay, it's game time. Now it's my turn to shine on what I need to do. I need to make my part happen. So, you know, I couldn't let them boys down because they didn't let me down.
All right, let's talk about making your part happen. If you had to describe yourself as a runner, how are you dangerous?
If I get to the second level, you know, if I get to the second level, it's a foot race with everybody. You know, low pad level, I'm very strong through the pad level, part low pad level. Explosive is one thing that everybody likes to say. Moving, hitting holes pretty fast, you know. I'm always, you know, just ready to go. You know, I feel like hesitation is not needed. You don't need to hesitate. You need to go, you know. So I always told myself, when you get the ball, just run. That was my thing. So, yes, sir.
At the same time, one of the things I've been impressed about just watching you in the reps at practice is you clearly understand that there are more levels for you to get to. What is in the immediate future for Keyshawn King in terms of what you're looking at improving right now for this week against Duke? And then also, what, as you look at the grand scheme of things, how good do you think you can be at the college level and beyond?
It's only up from here. It's only up from here. I feel that, you know, it's things I got to work on all around, you know. I feel like I can get better in every place, not just one place. I feel like I can get better all around. Obviously, I'm going through the phase of gaining more weight and things like that. Once I put on about 15 to 10 more pounds, you know, I feel like I'll be more of a power back, you know, things like that. But, yeah, every area I can work in, you know, so.
I'm in the process of gaining more weight too, Keyshawn, but it's unintentional on my part. You'll understand when you get to my age. We're joined by Keyshawn King. This is Hokie Pod approaching the Duke game. Let's take it back, though, to the Old Dominion game. You had a handful of carries in the first half, one of which wasn't actually a fumble, but you put the ball on the ground, and Justin Fuente essentially took you out of the game. What was your conversation like with him from a positive standpoint after the game? You guys clearly used it as a motivational tool.
Yes, sir. Obviously, everybody knows ball security is job security, like I said in the other meeting. If you fumble the ball, you're chancing the opportunities that the team has, you know. So you can't just put the ball on the ground like that and things like that. So I'm guessing that he knew that from me fumbling and things like that, like, he shouldn't have me out there. So I respected that from him, coming from him, like, hey, you need to sit out for right now because obviously what you did was wrong. So, you know, I couldn't argue with that, you know. So I took my lick and, you know, I moved on, you know.
All right, last one for you. During the recruiting process, were you able to take in a night game at Lane Stadium?
During the recruiting process, did I get to?
Have you been at a night game at Lane Stadium?
I have not been in a night game.
All right, I was hoping that would be your response. What have you heard about night games at Lane Stadium? What are you looking forward to on Friday night?
From what I'm hearing right now and what I'm seeing in classes and things like that, everybody is ready. Everybody's ready, so I know the stadium's going to be packed. I know the lights going to be on. I know it's going to be loud, you know. And of course, man, look, it's going to be rocking. So, you know, I just know it's going to be ready. It's going to be all gas, no brakes.
All gas, no brakes. I like that one. Last one for Keyshawn King. A day after he turns 19 years old, you guys are walking off the field late Friday night. What will you have accomplished as a group that will have you guys heading in the right direction?
Obviously, I just know we're going to go out there and fight, and we're not going to give up. I know that we're going to learn many lessons from out there. You know, obviously, as the schedule get harder, not any easier, we're going to go out there and we're going to become one and become a family, more of a family, come together as one. And I know that we're going to learn many lessons to better us for the next opponent.
Keyshawn, you're already a media savvy professional, man. We appreciate it, and happy belated birthday again. Go get him on Friday,
yes,
all right?
Sir, appreciate it, man.
He's freshman running back Keyshawn King. Took this program by storm against Furman. He looks to build on that performance. We build on Hokie Pod. We pause, we come back, we get you game night ready. It's night game in Blacksburg. There's nothing like it. Hokie Pod continues after the...
So I bet you've had the same conversation I've had. You've been talking to people and they say, I need to eat better. I just think I'd feel better if I ate better. And it's right about here where someone lays on the excuses. I'm too busy. I'm not a very good cook. Well, I'm here to tell you that there's actually somebody out there who wants to help you eat good and not spend a lot of time in the kitchen, no matter how well you know your way around. It's HelloFresh. They're going to give you delicious meals right on your doorstep, and they're going to tell you how to cook them. It's super easy, it's super delicious, and it's very nutritious. I have a job that's not 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. I work late a couple of nights a week, and I work Saturdays. This has been a huge help for us. We're eating good, we're getting out of our dinner rut with chef-curated recipes, and we're foodies. We like to eat, and we like to cook. And for this to hit our standards, that's saying something. HelloFresh made me a believer, and they want to make you a believer. And right now, for your first month, you can get $80 off by logging on to HelloFresh.com/college80 and entering the code college80. That's HelloFresh.com/college80 and enter the code college80. It's like getting 8 meals for free. You can also get yummy add-ons like garlic bread or cookie dough. No more excuses. Start eating right, and it's all coming to your front door. HelloFresh.com.
Welcome back to Hokie Pod, Episode 4. Wes McElroy, along with the voice of the Hokies, John Lazor, Virginia Tech Hall of Famer Mike Burnup. And we just heard Lazor's interview with Keyshawn King, and what a personality, what a character. What did you walk away from that interview thinking?
Well, I walked up to Justin Fuente a little bit later that day, and I said, Coach, I've got a new favorite Hokie, and it has nothing to do with his success thus far in the field. It's Keyshawn King. I love that kid. I love people that are so mature beyond their years. And, of course, as you heard, he just turned 19 within the last week. And the way that he represents himself, the way that he talks about his teammates and himself, there's a confidence there. And confidence, of course, comes from your own knowledge and your own preparation. And, he's going to be a great one. I think we see it from a physical sense, and we did, particularly against Furman in the second half. But he has all the characteristics that you want to see in somebody to be a leader of your program, and I think that's what he's going to develop into. So I came away very impressed.
Yeah, he is an impressive kid. And just some of the side stuff he's talked about, you know, with his dirt bikes and whatnot. But the thing that really was kind of stood out to me was that in halftime of the game, when we had him on postgame, he was talking about, I challenged those offensive line guys. Hey, get something going. Open up a hole for me. I can make something happen out there. And, man, the show he put on in the third quarter was pretty impressive. So being so young and so dynamic, that infectious smile, He's got an incredible future, and I got to keep him healthy and get him enough touches that he can work up that lather.
And as you just heard in that conversation, Wes, with Keyshawn, when he was talking about what Mike was just talking about, he said, you know, I said, what gave you the courage to talk to your offensive line? And he said, nobody else was saying something. Somebody had to say something. To have the confidence to do that in that cramped game locker room, I think says a lot about him.
We'll see Friday night. We'll see a lot of things Friday night. Liz, let me give you the floor and set up Friday's broadcast for us.
Yeah, we've got a busy day going. Of course, live music in Hokie Village. So the Kubota Kickoff Show, not to be deterred, will take place on location, but it will be a different location. So if you're walking by in Blacksburg and you're looking for Mike and Wes and Luther and the crew, they'll be right outside the Castle Coliseum ticket office where the giant Hokie Bird is, essentially, right out in front of those doors right there. You'll see the big Kubota tent, 5:30 to 6:30 for that show. All Joan the Frey at 6:30. Wes is going to have to find a way to maneuver Mike from the Kubota Kickoff Show down all the way Beamer Way to the booth and do it in 7 minutes because Mike contractually is obligated to be with me at 6:30. We'll jump on, of course, with our Virginia Beef Council kickoff, countdown to kickoff. Kickoff is scheduled quickly right after 7 o'clock at 7:01. So Hokie fans do need to be aware of that if they want to be in for Enter Sandman and all the pregame pomp and circumstance. That's going to happen about 6:57. Wes, you and I will have Hokies walkthrough on Facebook Live, Hokie Sports or Hokies Athletics page at 2 o'clock on Friday afternoon. And then on Monday night, Tech Talk Live will happen. Win, lose, or draw for the Hokies on Friday night, 7 to 8 at McLean's at First and Main. I will not be a part of it for the first time. Wes is going to step in, and I thank you for hosting that for me. But Coach Fuente will, of course, be there the entire hour.
All right, gentlemen, final thoughts. Mike, let's start with you.
You hate to say it's a must win, but it's kind of a must win, and they got to get it right because the rest of that schedule is going to be really, really difficult, and losing that game to BC kind of puts you a little bit behind the eight ball, and so you've had a week off, an extra week to prepare, and let's get this thing going and get those guys back that are hopefully healthy and kind of make a run here.
Lays, your final thoughts?
Yeah, everything that Mike just said and everything I said at the top of this podcast as well. The time's now. You know, we've been doing this for weeks. How do you respond to adversity? How do you live up to the execution level of your potential? And you've run out of time in terms of putting those things in place in preparation. Friday night is now go time. You need to show that. You need to show what this team is going to be about this year because you're at the end of the road in terms of your margin for error.
The Hokie Nation's like just been just sitting on the edge of their seat for something great to happen, and this is the opportunity to make it happen. And I think they realize that, and they better come out with a sense of urgency right from the get-go.
Gentlemen, always enjoy the conversation. I'll see you in Blacksburg on Friday.
Thanks,
buddy. All right, Wes, sounds good.
You got it. For the voice of the Hokies, John Lazier, for Virginia Tech Hall of Famer Mike Burnup, I'm Wes McElroy, and this has been Hokie Pod.